You're listening to media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. We are a multi-generational, Jesus-centered community of scripture, faith, and grace located in Tallahassee, Florida, on the campus of Florida State University. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. We hope that the next few moments are a time when God speaks into your life by the power of His Holy Spirit about His Son, Jesus Christ. Hey everybody, welcome back to Together with Jesus. Today we are reading Matthew 17 and 18, and we're starting off with the Transfiguration. We are going to be reading out of the English Standard Version today, the ESV. And after 6 days, Jesus took with Him Peter and James and John, His brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And He was transfigured before them, and His face shone like the sun, and His clothes became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with Him. And Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to Him." When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and have no fear." And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. And as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, "Tell no one the vision until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." And the disciples asked Him, "Then why do the scribes say that first Elijah must come?" He answered, "Elijah does come, and He will restore all things. But I tell you that Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize Him, but did to Him whatever they pleased. So also the Son of Man will certainly suffer at their hands." Then the disciples understood that He was speaking to them of John the Baptist. And when they came to the crowd, a man came up to Him, and, kneeling before Him, said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he has seizures and he suffers terribly, for often he falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him." And Jesus answered, "O faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him here to me." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was healed instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." As they were gathering in Galilee, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is about to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill Him, and He will be raised on the third day." And they were greatly distressed. When they came to Capernaum, the collectors of the 2 drachma tax went up to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the tax?" He said, "Yes." And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do kings of the earth take toll or tax? From their sons or from others?" And when he said, "From others," Jesus said to him, "Then the sons are free. However, not to give offense to them, go to the sea and cast a hook and take the first fish that comes up. And when you open its mouth, you will find a shekel. Take that and give it to them for me and for yourself." At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" In calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world for the temptations to sin, for it is necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than with 2 hands or 2 feet be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly, I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them. Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave his debt. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, Pay what you owe. So this fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, Have patience with me, and I will pay you. He refused, and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, You wicked servant! I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you? And in his anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. Hey there, everybody. Glad you're sticking around. This is the after party. This is where we stop and we talk about the readings that we just read. So we're going to be talking about Matthew 17 and 18 today. And we're going to be starting that off with the Transfiguration. So the Transfiguration is kind of this great moment in the lives of at least three of the disciples who are able to go up to the mountain in order to see Jesus transfigured before them. Also, interestingly, they're able to see Moses and Elijah and be able to kind of even know who they are. We're not really entirely sure how it is that they know that that is Moses and Elijah, but there's something about them that seems to communicate that. You also have this interesting moment in the Transfiguration story where there is a cloud that settles down upon the people that are there right before God speaks. And that cloud, yeah, people have connected that up with both Moses and Elijah. So Moses, when he was around, there was a cloud that hovered over the tent of meeting where Moses would talk to God. There's also a cloud that is present when God speaks to Elijah and in one of those sections. And so you kind of have this sense of like, oh, okay, the cloud that represented God's presence has been gone since Moses and Elijah, And now here it is, that cloud is back because Jesus is here. And so Jesus shows them who he is. He then goes down to have this kind of further conversation about who Elijah is and how they are to understand that kind of theological issue for them, because they really believe that Elijah needed to come back in order so that the Messiah could come. And Peter has just said he believes that Jesus is the Messiah, but they're trying to work out how this whole Elijah thing works. And so he's talking to them, and they kind of understand, oh, so John the Baptist was the Elijah figure that was necessary to come. Well, after that, you get this interesting moment where Jesus comes down from the mountain into sort of a scene of chaos. Again, this is sort of reminiscent of Moses. It's sort of like Moses went up to the mountain in order to talk to God. When Moses comes down from the mountain, what you get there in Moses' story is all of the people are dancing around a golden calf and they're committing idolatry. We don't have it quite that bad here, but what we do have is they come down and there's definitely a commotion because this man has asked Jesus' disciples to try to heal his son who is seemingly epileptic. They are not able to do that, and so they're asking why they can't do it, and Jesus is kind of rebuking his own disciples for their lack of faith and saying, you know, it's because of the smallness of your faith, and what you need to do is you need to have a greater faith in me. You need to have this sort of greater trust in who I am. And it seems like Jesus is getting kind of testy at this point. And that's an interesting thing for us to think about. Jesus is getting testy because he knows that he is getting closer now to going to the cross. He knows that he's getting closer now to the moment where he is going to be sacrificed on that cross for all of the people that are there. After that, you have what I think is a fascinating story. You have this story of the people coming from to grab the 2 drachma tax. So you have the tax collectors from the temple, though. This is not a Roman tax. This is a temple tax. This tax was 2 drachmas, which was a sort of negligible amount of money. It wasn't a lot, but it was required of every male who was 20 years and older. And so, you know, if nothing else, this tells us that, you know, the Apostle Peter is at least 20 years old. And we kind of have that notion that this was a tax that needed to be paid. And it wasn't paid, normally speaking, by the priests. And yet Peter is kind of like, oh, but do we get a pass here out of paying this tax? And, you know, he goes to Jesus and he begins to ask him about it. And Jesus sort of provides the tax miraculously. He tells Peter to go out and fish, and there in the fish's mouth you will find what you need in order to pay for this tax. And sure enough, that works out. This also, interestingly, connects back to the story before. So one of the people that were not required to pay the tax were people that were deaf and mute and people that were epileptic in the same way that the boy was. And so this kind of connects up. I don't know if there's any kind of meaning that we can really draw out of that, but this does connect up in that Jesus kind of gave this kid back, you know, sort of the right and the responsibility of paying this 2 drachma tax that then he and his own disciple are paying for. And this tax would have all gone to the upkeep of the temple. And so that's a little bit of maybe what's a little bit at stake here when Jesus and Peter are talking about it. Jesus has basically already said, I am the temple. There is, you know, you're going to try to tear me down. And yet at this point, you really have an issue here of Jesus saying, well, I am the temple, but I also know right now that the temple itself is going to continue to be a thing, at least for a while. It is going to be destroyed after he dies. And so you have that kind of situation that's showing up there. After that, we get into chapter 18. Chapter 18 really sort of starts to show a little bit of a shift in what Jesus is doing in his teaching. So as Jesus is teaching in this section, what he's doing is he is now starting to sort of sketch out maybe an ethic or a way that his church is supposed to be behaving. So, you know, if you're thinking about this in terms of Matthew, Matthew is writing this after Jesus has died, you know, decades after Jesus has died. And so one of the things that is probably an important piece of what Matthew is doing is saying, oh, well, let me explain a little bit through Jesus's own words about how the church needs to be operating. And that operation of the church is something that I can show you how this is supposed to go through using Jesus's own words. And so he kind of starts that off with this this great moment where the disciples come to him and they say, you know, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Now, this is an interesting question because essentially Jesus has already told them. He said, you know, that John is the greatest who has been born of a woman, and yet he is least in the kingdom of heaven. So there's kind of that sense that this is maybe something that they're talking about. That's maybe where this is coming from. And so they're wondering, okay, well, if John is the least, then who is actually going to be the greatest? And they're trying to work that out in their own minds as they're thinking through this. And so Jesus, once again, he kind of says, anybody who needs to do this needs to humble himself as a child. And this is one place where kind of our Western perspective on what Jesus is saying may not be exactly correct. So when we think of Jesus normally speaking of how children are more important or how we need to become like children, we usually think of things like, okay, I need to be more innocent, or I need to be more sort of childlike in wonder. But really what Jesus is talking about here is the loss of power, saying, hey, children have no power. They don't lord things over one another. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. Stop trying to be greater than your brothers and just recognize that you have no power in this. And, you know, that's a very humbling moment for us. It's a humbling moment for them. But that seems to be more along the lines of what Jesus is getting at here, rather than kind of being innocent or wondering. There is this kind of sense of Jesus saying, no, what you need to be doing is you need to be giving up the power that you are trying to lord over other people. After that, you get, you know, Jesus actually getting pretty almost kind of violent in his talk as he talks about what should happen to people who are stumbling blocks. You know, he tells people what should happen to people that cause other people to sin, and what should happen to you if even your own body causes you to sin. And he uses this this kind of example again of, you know, if your eye causes you to sin, you know, rip it out and throw it away. You know, it's better for you to go to heaven without an eye than it is for you to go into hell with both of your eyes. After this, you get Jesus talking about seeking the lost, and so he starts this off with this parable about if a man has 100 sheep, isn't he going to leave the 99 and go and find the one that is lost? And you know, this is kind of good news for what has been said just before this, that people should watch out for being stumbling blocks and things like that. But what Jesus is saying is, you know, even if people do fall because of these stumbling blocks, that God is a merciful God. God is somebody who is going to come out after you. And that sort of paints the picture for the next little piece of what we're going to be taking a look at here. So in this sort of sense of seeking the lost, you have, you know, this parable of the shepherd who's going out for the one sheep. And then he gives you sort of this like step-by-step process of working through, okay, if there is somebody who has sin in your community, somebody who is, you know, who has sinned against you, then you go through this process of going, you know, to that brother yourself. And then if that doesn't work, then you bring two or three others. And then if that doesn't work, then you bring the church. Again, this sort of, you know, like this new word, the ecclesia, that you're going to bring along with you. And then if not, If that doesn't work, then you treat him as a tax collector and a sinner, which for Jesus means that you're just actively trying to get them to come back into the fold. You're recognizing that they are no longer kind of acting as a Christian, and you want to get them back to that. You want to treat them as somebody who needs to hear the gospel all over again. And so in response to that, then Peter comes up and he says, well, Lord, how often should I forgive my brother? You know, should I forgive him up to seven times? And so in response to that, Jesus says, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 77 times. Now, there's a lot going on with that sort of sense of like not seven, but 77. A part of that is that the rabbis at the time were saying, okay, well, you know, kind of the best that you should be expected to do is to forgive somebody up to three times. If you forgive somebody up to three times and they do you wrong again, then after that, it's okay for you to take revenge, or it's okay for you to do whatever kind of nasty thing you need to do to them. And so for Peter to say, oh, well, you know, I'm willing to go above and beyond that. I'm willing to go up to seven times. Now, what Peter may be referencing there is that God has actually, in the book of Genesis, promised that anybody who harms Cain, the person who killed Abel, that if anybody harms Cain, then he's going to take revenge on them seven times over. And so it could be that that's kind of what Peter is referring to here. It's also possible that Jesus is referring to another kind of lesser-known character in Genesis, a guy named Lamech. And Lamech was this person who... Lamech is kind of this bad guy who comes up and he's even kind of boasting that he's so bad that, you know, he's so to be feared that Cain's revenge is sevenfold, but Lamech's is 77-fold. And, you know, that's kind of what Jesus is talking about here. Jesus is saying it's not only just like this, that you would forgive somebody seven times, but that actually you would forgive them 77 times. You would go above and beyond. And that's what Jesus is talking about here as he gets into this parable about this person who owes a ridiculous amount of money. So the amount of money that he is supposed to have owed the master is 10,000 talents. And so if you think about what 10,000 talents is, 10,000 talents is a talent is at least about 20 years worth of labor, 20 years worth of labor. And here, this guy has gotten himself into hock with 10,000 of those. So 10,000 times 20, you can do the math. You know, it's just a ridiculous amount of money. And then he gets forgiven of that, and he goes out and he sees somebody else who owes him just a fraction of that. It really just kind of like 3 months worth of labor. And he demands that he pay that. And so you can see the kind of inequality that's coming up here. And that's a part of what Jesus is pointing out, is that oftentimes it seems like the way that we're treating the forgiveness of sins with other people is that we're seeing our forgiveness as being something that is greater than what it actually is. Well, that ends our time together. Thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to reading the next set of two chapters with you coming up. Have a great week, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you for listening to this media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. If you would like to financially support more media from University Lutheran, please visit our website and click the Give Now button, which will enable you to engage in the Christian discipline of giving tithes and offerings to God through His church. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord lift up His face upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you with favor and give you peace.